And I didn't have a funny story. I had a sad story. Sad story. See, my history here goes back a few years. It's been in 1997, I first came to Meadow Lake as a constable at the RCMP. And, you know, it was just awesome coming to this church. It was a really cool family, and we got to know it. And as Shane went over some of the attributes that the church has found for itself, well, those are true. This was a welcoming church, a fun church. And they eventually thought fit to allow me to be an elder, and I did that with Wes and Ron. And it was a good group of men. It was really a privilege for me to serve with those guys, and some of them aren't here anymore. Then I moved away, went to Regina, went on the ear team and all that stuff, came back, and one day they asked me to preach. And I'll never forget, we were doing two services then, and it was terrible. I bombed. I saw Wes. I can still envision him about where Brad is sitting back there, and I said something, and I saw his eyes kind of go big, and he kind of got up like the shepherd's hooks coming out, but he didn't do that. But the next service, he pulled me aside and said, "Hey, you got to fix that." So I did. I don't even remember what it was that I said, but I had to fix it. And I did, and then he put me in the penalty box for like 10 years. And then it was like 10 years later, they said, "Hey, can you?" And I had gone and come back, and can you preach? And I a lot of people were gone from that one. So I said, "Do you remember what happened last time?" And they kind of had this numbed look, and then, "Oh yeah." But we're desperate, so can you still preach? So I said, "Okay, I can, but how about I'll play a DVD?" You know, because there's podcasts, and there's like Facebook, and there's, you know, but I'll just put somebody on that's really good instead of me. And we did that, and it worked good. I think so. Everybody was happy, and people commented about the message and said that they had been touched, and they took something from it. So that was great. And so now here we are. The church is, I hate to say desperate again, but Ken asked me. Kenny, we're out picking berries. We have a berry farm here, and we're doing harvest. And Ken says, "Hey, we really need somebody to preach." And I just wanted to say no. I really wanted to say no. Because it's kind of scary. And especially if you don't, you think, "Well, what am I going to say?" But something in me wouldn't let me say no. And I'm being honest, it would not let me say no. And I am supposed to say yes to this. I don't know why, but I did. I said, "Yeah, I'll come," and here I am, and I have to be honest, God, there was about 5 nights in a row where I would wake up at about 3 in the morning, and I couldn't sleep. I couldn't sleep, and it wasn't a bad thing. See, sometimes I struggle with the insomnia, and that's a bad thing. You know, like Bree would tell you, like PTSD and all that stuff, and that's real. It's real stuff. And sometimes it's not fun. And I'll bet some of you have experienced that, and you haven't slept. But this time, it wasn't bad. It wasn't bad at all. And in fact, it was like my mind would be racing, and I'd be thinking about this day. What should I say? And so here we are, and I'd like you to turn in your Bibles, if you have them. If you have them, turn to Matthew, and we're going to start in chapter 4. And we're going to go through to chapter 8, and it's going to be really quick. It's going to be quick. Just a quick overview. But it's important, because it's going to do the setup, right? If you look, in fact, I'll set it up a little bit for you. If you look in Matthew at the beginning of chapter 8, Jesus says, Matthew writes about Jesus. He says, when he came down from the mountains, verse 28 of chapter 7, when Jesus had finished saying these things, the crowds were amazed at his teaching. Because he taught as one who had authority and not as their teachers taught, not as their pastors taught. So what did he do different? So to look at what he did different, we got to dig into it and look at it. So I want to give a quick overview, and then I want to make 3 points about what I see. So the overview, he's born. Matthew chapter 1, we get big genealogy, blah, blah, blah. He's born. We all know that story, Christmas. And then but let's get to chapter 4. And it says, this is when Jesus is going to start his ministry. And in chapter 4, it says the Spirit took Jesus into the wilderness, and he was tested or tempted. Now, that's a bit weird to me. I don't know what it is to you, but if your parents want you to fail, you guys in front row, your parents want you to fail. So they take you to three things, and they give you three tests, and they want you to see if you're going to make it. Typically, your parents don't do that. They try to avoid that stuff, right? You don't take people to the bar to see how they're going to do, right? You stay away from there. You don't turn on a bad movie to have people, or you don't take people to and have them do things. You don't go rob a bank, or tempt them. You think, hey, you want to rob the bank? No, we don't do that. But that's what the Spirit of God did. Took Jesus, said, we're going on a road trip, and we're going to see how you do. And he passed. He passed with flying colors. And I think Satan was just deflated too, because remember, Satan was also a very high archangel of God. And Satan, those very same temptations, Satan chose to give into those. And as a result, walk away from God. So God allows Jesus to be tempted and tested, but he's checking for submission and servanthood. So that's how it starts. And Jesus passes and he heads off and he starts his ministry. And as he's starting his ministry, he's just preaching and teaching, he comes along people and he invites people on this journey with him. He invites people like us, right? Ordinary people, fishermen, tax collectors, people like that. Just like us. Lawyers, electricians, doctors, teachers, students, people just like us. He says, come along this journey with me. And I've got something special in store for you. I will make you fishers of men or fishers of women, right? I want you to catch people, help me catch people with my vision. So he does that. Then we see Jesus acting, and he's now discipling his believers, right? He's living it out. He's saying, let's go golfing, and I'll show you how to golf. Let's go do surgery in the Medlake Hospital. I'll show you how to do surgery. And he not only talked it, he walked it. That's what we see. Before I go further, I want to give you a homework assignment. Everybody should have devotions every day, right? Everybody should take a time out with God and say, what are you going to do with me? What are you going to teach me today? How can I live my life for you? I'd like you to read, and you probably already have a devotional going, but Matthew chapter 4 through chapter 8. Read it every day this week, every morning, or pick a time, and just say, God, this is how you ministered. How can I minister? Ask yourself that question. But let's keep going. So we get this. Then he starts doing this. And then we end up in the Beatitudes in chapter 5. Blessed are the poor in spirit. Blessed are those who mourn. Blessed are the meek. Blessed are the hungry and thirsty. So he talks about what it is that's going to happen to people that actually are on this journey. They're going to be blessed. They are. And things are going to happen. And then he gets there's going to be results. He talks about results in verse 13. You are the salt of the earth. And then he says, you are the light of the world. And in other words, there's going to be a change. Now, I don't know about you, but I like making, Ken Ness and I, we make deer sausage annually. We've had some real failures, and we've had some mediocre successes. But salt is a big deal. You put too much salt in, the dog doesn't even eat it. So that's bad. But a little bit of salt, everybody wants to eat it. Everybody. They say, this is great. And same thing with a light. We went on a canoe trip once with a bunch of youth. We had 30 youth, and actually we had 31. So we had an odd number. We had one person in a one-person kayak, and off we go in the canoes, and I was the guy in the kayak. I was at the end. I was making sure all the vehicles were locked and stuff, and we take off, and one of our old beater canoes is sitting on the beach. And I am sure I counted right. We have 15 canoes, 15 groups of two, and a kayak. How come we must have two people behind? And I go searching for the two people. They're not around. They are gone. So, okay. This is a mystery. Maybe they didn't like this canoe because it was really beat up and they left it behind. But anyway, I go and we kayak and portage and we get to our campsite and everybody's here. And you know what? There's 15 canoes here. Uh-oh. Somebody has their canoe stolen. And so anyway, at the night, we don't really know how to fix this. It's already dark. And we're on this island way in the middle of nowhere. And, but anyway, some of the kids had fireworks, and we were playing around. We had a couple of flares, and we sent them off. And the next thing you know, we hear a bunch of yelling as leaders. And here's this guy, this one-legged guy, has canoed up in this beat-up canoe. And he said, "You stole our canoe." I said, "We didn't steal your canoe, but I know it's here." And so we got him the right canoe, and we helped him canoe back over the portage. And because he's a one-legged guy, I'm serious. He had one leg. And there's a couple of waterfalls in Bad Rapids here too. So if he took, and he wasn't used to this. So anyway, he was happy after, but he was angry at the start. But light's important. Light's important. Jesus goes on. He talks about, and then there's a break actually, and he starts talking about how we're supposed to live. What we can do. You know, like don't murder anybody. But he's not really talking about murder because most people don't murder people. He's talking about our attitude toward people. He says, don't commit adultery. And most people don't commit adultery. Most people stay married, but their thought life is at risk. Don't get divorced. Most people don't get divorced, but some of the ones that do find every excuse under the book to do it. Swearing. And he goes on, eye for an eye, love for enemies, giving to the needy, prayer, fasting. And he goes into this. How we're supposed to live, what we're supposed to do. And that's why I gave you the homework assignment, because there's a lot there to read. You'll see why I'm going there in a minute. If we want to be fruitful, if we want to be wise, if we want to be in the game, so to speak, we need to follow this roadmap that Jesus gives us. Now I want to talk about why it was amazing. And there's three things that really stick out in my mind, they're a little bit interrelated, but they're there. Now let me just get to my right page because my notes are scrambly. Here we are. The first thing that I'd like to talk, or first point that I see in this, is that when we live as Jesus declares, we have an impact. We're impactful. We're attractive to most. We're hated by some. He says it himself. If you look in chapter 5, he's just gone through the Beatitudes, talks just before salt and light. He said, "Blessed are you when people insult you, persecute you, and falsely say all kinds of evil against you." But let's look at Jesus' life. Let's look at his life, you know, because it's a challenge. You know, I remember being young, and I'm kind of picking on you guys. You're young. You go to high school. It's not really maybe popular to say, "I'm a Christian." But those of us who go to the office, it's not really all that easy either to live out your faith. Sometimes it's kind of hard when the boss is a jerk and things, you know, things aren't going. It's kind of hard. But it's important. We're called to do it. But when we look at what Jesus modeled, we see that most people actually like Jesus. Most people didn't choose Jesus, but they liked him. See that? When the Gospels, they're full of that. Most people liked Paul. They didn't necessarily choose the faithful in the Bible. And Jesus talks about the road is wide, but you know there's the narrow road and very few people choose it. He was serious about that. But Christianity is popular because Christianity does nice things to nice people. When you're kind to somebody, it's nice. When you're giving, it's nice. When you love somebody, it's nice. But not everybody chooses it. But we're attractive. And we're called to be attractive. We should be attractive to people. A small group is going to hate us, and a small group killed Jesus. We saw that. A small group in the world today there's martyrs all over the world. A small group is killing people, but we're called to be attractive. So what's the difference? When we look I thought of it. So I was just on a canoe trip, but those same guys, those same leaders that came with me on that one of those first canoe trips, there's one guy that hasn't missed canoeing in 25 years. He has gone every year, one of those leaders that I first took on a trip. And now he's inviting me, which is really cool. So this year, we went canoeing. And for the first time in like 15 years, probably, I went with this group of guys. And we had a good time. At least I thought we did. When we got back, Wayne, the leader, he ran into Monica. And he said, "Did Rod have a good time?" Because it didn't seem like it. He wasn't the same guy. And boy, did that hit me like a ton of bricks. Because I thought, you know, and I look in the mirror and I know he's right. I know he's right. I know I'm not the same guy. I know that there's been some water under the bridge. I know that I've been wrestling with some things. You know, partly, I mean, Shane called me an elder, so that's like old, right? So I know I'm getting older, so that's one thing I'm wrestling with. But just, you know, life itself, just the transition, career, all that stuff is there. And it's impactful. It does affect your life. So he said, but that hit me when Wayne, when a close friend who I've known for 20, almost 30 years says, hey, you're different. Now, but he was the one to say it because he hadn't seen me for 15 years. So he knew that I should be like that, but I'm like this. So I had to fix that. Now I'm going to converse that story. And I'm going to say, when I was 20, I was framing in Vancouver. And there's another young fellow, Lyle Block and myself. We built houses there, and we were working with another guy, and another two guys. And one of the guys that worked with us grew up in the church, but didn't go to church. Saturday night, you'd ask him, what are you doing, Waldo? And he'd, you know, he's off to the next party. That's where he's going. And but we were, me and Lyle, we were part of our church youth group. In fact, we led youth, and we were having fun. We would come back with all the stories of all these escapades, including, you know, things like sneaking onto a cruise ship, running around, playing sneak. Anyway, stuff like that. We'd have fun. A couple years later, so I left, but now a couple years later, I'm back, and I'm in university, or I'm in Bible college, and I'm married to an awesome lady, and I have a little bit of time on my hands, so I go to work with Harold and Waldo again a little bit, just because. But Waldo's completely different. Waldo's going to church. Waldo's fired up. And I said, man, what you got to tell me? What happened to you? He said, it was you guys, me and Lyle. He said, you guys showed me that Christianity doesn't have to be dull and boring and plain. It can be fun, and it should be fun. And I found fun. I found engagement. I found that this is purposeful and interesting. I thought, man, so here's Rod Entz. Like, that was a bunch of years ago. So now me, fast forward a bunch of years, and now I'm that dud that's not making it fun anymore. I got to make it fun. Nobody wants to hang around with a dud. So I got to do it. So Christians, when you see Jesus, he amazed people. He amazed them. He wasn't dull and boring like the Pharisees. The Pharisees were really good at laws and reciting scripture and making everything like this is how it's supposed to be. And Jesus said, no, it's not how it's supposed to be. That's the first thing I see. Second thing I think that really sticks out to me is preaching is just talking. So I'm just, what I'm doing, you know, how many of you remember like the sermon like a month ago? I do. I'll tell you why. Because I was in my son's church in Calgary, and it was rocking. And the pastor there was Colby Leash. If you Google him, Colby Leash, I mean, he just hit it out of the park. And he said some things that really impacted my life. That's why I remember. But if I'm honest, the average sermon doesn't necessarily impact my life. Preaching is just talking. And you can preach about anything. If you like John Deere tractors, you can preach about them, right? You like good ping golf clubs, you can preach about them. Right? So preaching isn't the key. It's living and emulating what you're preaching about. And that was the difference. The Pharisees were really good at preaching, but they were really lousy at emulating. Jesus emulated. Jesus lived it. And that's what we're supposed to do. We're supposed to walk the talk. And you know what struck me is when I go to heaven, and when we get to go to heaven, we're not going to be held accountable on judgment day for what we said. It's going to be a lot less than what we did. What we did is going to matter. I have a couple of role models, and some of you would remember Dr. Henry Block started Camp Washkety. Some of you have been there. So awesome camp. I had the privilege of growing up to have Dr. Henry Block as a kid. So I was, you know, from zero, I don't remember zero very good, one, don't remember two. But I was good friends with his son, Milton. Milton's a year younger than me, and we would hang around, play. And as a result, I got a lot of chances to hang around with Mr. Block, too. And some of that time was at the camp. But Mr. Block really lived what he spoke about. He expected a high standard from all of us. Me as a friend of his son, he expected a high standard. But he lived what he did, what he believed in. That was awesome for seeing. Another brief example. I'm losing time here, so I'm going to flip over here. But there's a couple of people that I think really, from this church, I'll share a couple stories from this church. I don't see Tim here today, Tim Schroeder. But one day, I was driving home. I'd been called out for work, and we lived toward Neset Lake at the time, so I'd been called out, and I was going back home. And I saw this white truck and this boat and on the park at the side of the road with the flashers going. And three people were standing around the truck, and there was another vehicle on this side of the road. And as I got closer, I could see that's Tim. That's Tim's vehicle. And then I could recognize it was dusk, and I could recognize Tim talking to some people. And excuse me. I drove by, right? I waved and said hi out of my open window, but I drove by. Things were under control. And the next day, a few days later, I talked to Tim. I said, what happened? And he said, well, they broke down. And they were broken down. I was just driving by. And I stopped to see if they needed a hand. And they did. They did need a hand. They needed parts from the parts store. They needed a significant mechanical help. And Tim was able to offer that. Another illustration, Ashley and Kim Russell. I don't know if they're here. They might be. I didn't see them when I first came in. But Ashley and Kim, a young friend of ours he's from Borden. His name's Jackson Weeb. And Jackson works for Bayer Crop Science. And this summer, he was doing, as part of his route, he was at the Russell farm and doing his thing about chemicals. And Kim and Ashley invited him in, along with a couple of other people. And they blessed them with a coffee and stuff. But anyway, Jackson, who's he'd be about 23, 24, he was talking to me sometime later, and he says, do you know the Russells? I said, oh, yeah, I know the Russells. We went to the same church. And yeah, they are really nice people. They're really nice people. And he said, I knew they were Christians. I knew it. So I guess I tell those two stories because I think Jesus would want us to be that intentional and even more. When we have an opportunity to fix somebody's truck, we should say, you know why I'm doing this? Because Christ changed me. When we give somebody a meal, you know why I'm doing this? Because Christ changed me. Not that nobody else would give them a meal, or not that nobody else would stop and help somebody get fixed, because hope, that again, that's a Christian quality. Those are qualities that come from Christianity. That's why we're popular. That's why Canada's popular. Trudeau thinks we're popular because of other things. But we're popular because of Christianity, because of what Jesus taught. That's why. Let's be that. The third thing that I see is that what Jesus tells us is impossible. Now, I don't know about you, but when I read chapter 6, and it's talking about in chapter 7, don't worry, treasures in heaven, how you treat people, murder. I sometimes don't get along with people. I don't know about you. Eye for an eye, sometimes I wish that. Giving, fasting, prayer, I fall short. I think if you read this every day, I think you're going to agree with me that most of what Jesus teaches here is really impossible for us. I don't think you can do it. In fact, I know you can. I challenge you. But Jesus says, with him, the impossible is possible. But that's the key, with him. Walking the journey with the right person, going the right place is possible. The other thing that's possible, or that's only possible with God, I think is best explained. Now let me, my thing's sliding down here for some reason. I'm getting rid of this. If you have your Bibles, or if you just want to jot this down, but Ezekiel 36, verses 25. This is really the crux of the matter. It comes right to what Jesus said, and really, it's only, this is the only way it's possible. If you're here, this is the only way it's possible. Jesus says, God says, through Ezekiel the prophet, but I think this is what Jesus is saying. I will sprinkle clean water on you, and you will be clean. Only Jesus has that water. I will cleanse you from all your impurities and from all your idols. You know, somebody said once about a self-centered person, when a self-centered person looks in the mirror, they don't know they're self-centered. They can't. I think that's true. I think that's true for us. I think we have idols and impurities in our life, and often they're staring right back at us, and we don't know they're there. But God does. And God will take those away. He's going to cleanse us from those. He says, I'll give you a new heart and put a new spirit in you. I'll do that. I'll remove from you your heart of stone and give you a heart of flesh. That hate that you have for that person, or that inability to get over that hurdle or that disagreement, I'll help you with that. I'll give you the softness that you need to make that happen. And I'll put my spirit in you and move you to follow my decrees and be careful to keep my laws. That's what the impossibility is, that we can't do it without God. It's only possible with him. You know, and the beauty of that, when you think about that and reflect on that, the beauty of that is God is calling us to lives that supersede anything we can do on our own. We can't touch it, but with him we can do it. In conclusion, I just want to say that I'm preaching to me. Remember I said I was up about 5 nights? Well, I was. But I thought this message is more for me than it is for you. But I think it's for you too. If you would ask Monica, she would tell you I'm a pretty broken guy in all this time. But what really... I guess what I've really seen is I'm taking things way too serious in my life. And there are things that I can't control. Remember that impossibility piece? It's impossible. I can't do that. But with God, I can do it. So why am I taking it so seriously when I'm not supposed to take it so seriously? It's supposed to be serious, but like live life seriously, but not like it's so like it controls you. Give it to God. Let God run it. He promises that nothing's impossible for him. The other thing is the future. The future is God's, and I feel a bit trapped. I mean, you know our story with Nikki and her accident and the situation, and that's a bit constraining. That's not what you choose for your middle years of your life. You know, somebody said it. Bonnie said it. We're talking about expenses with kids in college. They cost money. Cost money. You're not going to make your parents pay, right? No. Anyway, they would love to pay for you. But it's constraining, and we don't like to be constrained as people. We like to be free. So we plan our retirements, and we look forward to a pension and retirement. We say, I want to be free. But that's not what life's about. Life is about constraints. It is. We're going to be constrained. There's going to be sickness and trouble and challenges all through our lives. That's going to be that. The Bible's clear about that. What are we going to do with that? If we run that race or walk that walk with God, it's going to be possible. If we try to do it ourselves, impossible. Jesus says, follow me and I will make you fishers of men. We live in a world that's really broken. One of my job, people ask me what I do. I'm a policeman by title only. I work in an office. This is what I wear to work, pretty much. And I deal with people who have problems. Police officers who are struggling with mental health issues and choose alcohol, drugs. I deal with bosses who just have had it up to here with an employee and become bullying. And I deal with the employees that don't want to be servants as well. All the whole plethora, that's what I deal with. And I see this brokenness. And some of you know Tom McCullough from the old pastor from the Alliance Church. Tom is our RCMP chaplain right now. Tom is a wonderful, godly man. And I'm able to connect with Tom a lot and connect people with him a lot, but that's not the only fix. I mean, there's other things too. I mean, Bree's here, she knows about some of that stuff. But people are broken and they need the supernatural, because you can go for counseling. You can read self-help books. That's going to be beneficial a little bit, but it's not going to fix everything. God's the only one that's going to fix it. Now, I'm a Facebook creeper. How many people creep on Facebook? Let's be honest. Okay, I'm not on Facebook, but Monica's on Facebook, and I know the password, right? So I get to creep. So I can go on, and I look at, you know, it's wonderful seeing things that are going on Facebook, right? Paddleboarding, camping, you know, whatever. It's wonderful. But Facebook only tells the good story, right? You don't see a lot of bad stuff on Facebook. Yeah, a little bit, but not much. Mostly it's our good stories that we like to put on Facebook. Facebook, I challenge you, is a bit of a facade. And it's something we should be aware of in our own lives. Please keep putting your good stuff on Facebook, because it's fun to see. But I say this because just when you're putting stuff on Facebook, say, am I really happy? Is God, am I walking this race or walking this life journey with somebody who's got my back all the time, even when I screw up? Because that's what it's about. That's what's going to matter. That's what's going to be the best. And that's my message today. I hope that it's impacted you. I know it impacted me. And I want, again, a homework assignment, read. Because if you're invested in God's word cannot come back empty. And with that, I want to close in prayer. And then I'll turn it over to the worship team. Father in heaven, thanks so much for your love for us and your care and your passion for our lives. And this church has been a wonderful blessing, Lord. And I pray that you'd continue to bless them. Have people take their spiritual life seriously and just love to engage with you in a relational way, a one-on-one way, and to see what supernatural, special things you have in store for them. Thanks so much for being our God. Amen.